Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of the UK this time. I've been traveling in Wales and England for the last couple of days with Pastor Isaac Liu. If you're not familiar with Pastor Isaac Liu, he's got a powerful book about his life called Son of the Underground. One of the few people you'll ever hear speak that was born to a mother on the run while his father was in prison. His father is known as the Heavenly Man, Pastor Yun. For those of you that don't know, Pastor Yun has not been able to travel for a while just because his wife is sick. So we kindly ask you, if you're listening to this podcast, pray for her. She's had pretty bad health for many years. She has a condition that developed while she was in China on the run, and she had to go long periods of time through harsh circumstances, which included cold, extreme cold, starvation. Life on the run is not easy in China when you're a pastor, and the government has a desire to catch you and change your faith, or at least find out who you're talking to. What churches have you been planting? Where have you been? Look at your phone and see all the people that you've been messaging. She endured that for many years, and it took a toll on her body, and she's been dealing with a condition for a while, and that condition has just led to a breakdown of many different organs in the last couple of months. So Brother Yun has been together with her, praying with her, staying with her, reading the Bible to her every single day. And we really do covet prayers from those of you from around the world. She's back home now from the hospital after being in the hospital for a couple of months. She's back home now and recovering. So continue to pray for her health, as well as the strength of Brother Yun as he stays by her side. As Brother Yun is not able to travel, his son Isaac Liu has been traveling in his place, and his message has been so powerful about how he came to Christ and his first experiences as a child of life on the run, and now as a pastor in Germany, being the very first family sent out by the Chinese church to go and repay a debt to those first missionaries who came to China and preached the gospel. He's now been doing that for about a decade, and also working together with Back to Jerusalem missionaries in many different countries, preaching to them, encouraging them, supporting them, and raising the awareness about the work that they're doing in so many different countries. But during this time, we have also been doing the filming of our next video series called Chasing Legacy. And for those of you that don't know, Chasing Legacy is a brand new video series that we're going to be coming out with this year, where Back to Jerusalem goes to research the people that are the pioneers of faith, the foundation of these early church fathers who set up much of the Christian freedom that we have today, and not just in the West, but in nations around the world. And that took us to the hometown of Griffith John in Wales, Swansea. And we were just so blown away. But what that led us to was something even more phenomenal. When we went to go do research on Griffith John, we had no clue what we would actually find. And what we found was kind of a connection between Griffith John and a missionary by the name of Robert Germain Thomas. I should have known about Robert Germain Thomas. I think I've actually written about Robert Germain Thomas. We knew the story of Robert Germain Thomas, just didn't know his name, didn't know the details. But that's what I love about Chasing Legacy. We are uncovering stories from those very first church fathers, from those very early missionaries that most people have never known. Stay tuned to Back to Jerusalem in the next couple of years, because Chasing Legacy is going to uncover several stories that you've never heard before, and you're going to ask yourself, how have I never heard about this? There is a very famous radio personality. His name is Paul Harvey. And when I was a kid, Paul Harvey was just this amazing voice on the radio. And he had a great way of sharing stories. And what he would do is he would share these amazing stories that by themselves, on their own, were fascinating. But what made them even more fascinating is when he told you who those people were, the stories that he was telling, who they were related to. So he would say, he would tell a story, for instance, and say, you know, there was a little boy who saw a dog that was about ready to be run over by a horse and carriage. And so he risked his life to go and save the dog. And then the dog became his best friend. And then the dog followed him around on the campaign trails. Now, this is not a real story, but it's an example of a Paul Harvey type of story. And at the end, he would say, and that little boy's name was Abraham Lincoln. Now you know the rest of the story. That's how he always ended his radio segments, was now you know the rest of the story. And what it would do is, like, every older man that I knew of in my hometown that would gather at like 5 o'clock in the morning at the coffee shops, they would gather around the radio and they would just wait to kind of hear that person, that story. And at the very end, when he would say, now you know the rest of the story, everybody'd be like, wow, I didn't know that was Abraham Lincoln. That was the charm of Paul Harvey. And in many ways, I was encouraged by that, because these are individuals that are a link to our history. These pioneers of the faith set the foundations for what you and I have access to today. Whether you are Lutheran, Presbyterian, Pentecostal, or non-denominational, someone came in a chain link reaction almost from the book of Acts for you to receive the gospel. And that's one of the reasons why we went to do the research for Griffith John. Griffith John was a missionary for almost 60 years in central China, the very first missionary to Wuhan, and planted over 100 churches. What was fascinating about Griffith John was that we arrived together, myself and our Chasing Legacy team, arrived together because we did our very first book with Underground Publishing House, our book printing arm. We did our very first book of Underground Publishing House for Back to Jerusalem called A Voice in the Darkness. And this is a book written by Griffith John. We changed it a little bit and made it for a modern audience. But it's such a deep, rich, powerful book that we had to get it out there. It's kind of been lost over time. And we wanted to bring that back for a new generation of believers. We wanted to bring that book back of Griffith John for a new generation of Chinese. And this is one of those powerful stories that we felt that this generation of Christians needed. And while we were there, we were surprised and blessed to meet with the members of the Griffith John Society. There's a society now in Swansea in Wales that celebrate the life and the mission and the dedication and sacrifice of Griffith John. And they preserve the history of his stories and his testimony. We actually went to Griffith John Street, and there are flats that are named after Griffith John. In fact, we were there doing the filming, and I do believe that in the background of our filming, there was a drug deal taking place. Those flats were not the most safe area of Swansea. And there's quite a drug epidemic hitting that area, even the remote areas of Wales, which we found a bit ironic, considering that Griffith John was the head of efforts to eradicate the opium trade. So he fought against opium usage in China that was very much being used by Western countries to control China. And today, we see the exact opposite happening. If you don't understand the history in China, you may think that the opium trade, or the drug trade rather, in Europe and America is just happening as a as an epidemic to a broken culture. And that may be part of the answer. But the truth is China very much remembers history. And China is making large amounts of fentanyl. They're the largest supplier of fentanyl in the world today. Fentanyl, if you're not familiar with it, it's one of the most addictive drugs. It's a synthetic drug, one of the cheapest made drugs out there in the world today. Extremely addictive and extremely dangerous. And this drug is mainly produced in China, and it's laced with other drugs that might be cheaper, low quality. And so fentanyl is sometimes laced with other drugs, which can be a deadly concoction, and has led to so many people dying from overdose. And even though it's illegal to sell it in China, China is allowing it to be made so that it can be sent to nations all around the world. They are behind the opiate or the fentanyl epidemic in the world today. And we saw that at the flats that are named after Griffith John, one of the missionaries who fought to keep drugs out of the hands of Chinese. And when we were talking to the society gave us a very interesting story about how they started. And I hope to cover that story at a later time together with Bethany, the co-founder of Underground Publishing House. But one of the things that came up during this time was the topic of missions and missionaries sent from Wales. Now, if you're from Wales and you're listening to this podcast, I think you're going to enjoy it, because not only do you have the pioneer of Griffith John, you also have this other Welsh missionary, which was the very first Christian missionary martyr in North Korea. His name was Robert Germain Thomas. And he was actually sent to the Korean coast as a missionary in the mid-1800s, around 1865. So around the same time that America was experiencing a civil war, Wales sent the very first missionary to serve in North Korea. So he arrives on the Korean Peninsula. It was before the split of the North and the South. And the gospel had never arrived there before. The very first person credited with bringing the gospel to Korea as a missionary was Carl Gutzlaff. And I'm actually writing his story right now. And I plan to go and visit his hometown. So if you know anything about Carl Gutzlaff, if you know anything about his hometown, I would ask you to kindly reach out to us and let us know who to contact and where to go, because we're doing filming about this amazing pioneer of missions. And before there was Robert Germain Thomas, there was Carl Gutzlaff as a missionary into North Korea. And Robert Germain Thomas came after him, because Carl Gutzlaff just went there briefly, visited and distributed Chinese Bibles to Koreans. These Chinese Bibles came from Robert Morrison, whose biography we completed last year in a book called Bury Me in China. You can find that on our website or on the Underground Publishing website, Bury Me in China. That is the story of Robert Morrison, who translated the very first Chinese Bible, and he worked together with Carl Gutzlaff. You'll learn about Carl Gutzlaff in the latter part of that biography. And so he was the very first one that arrived on the Korean Peninsula to hand out Bibles and preach the gospel. But Robert Germain Thomas was the very first missionary that was specifically focused on taking the gospel to North Korea. And during his first visit, Thomas kept a diary when he went into Korea on the 3rd and the 4th of November in 1865. And he wrote this. Let me just read a little bit from his diary. November 3rd, 1865. This morning, half a dozen junkmen went ashore to catch shellfish, on which three of them were cruelly beaten about the legs by a score of cowardly islanders. Our little fleet of nine junks was in a state of high indignation. We could send 50 men to fight. In their own fashion, they immediately loaded their rusty matchlocks and small guns with powder only, and taking their sampans, flying their respective flags amidst great beatings of gongs, and made for the village. All the islanders were congregated like a flock of white sheep on the top of a hill. Two or three of the fiercer ones were going through all kinds of warlike maneuvers on a nearby cliff. Steadily, our flotilla advanced, firing volley after volley of powder, the more prudent one fire about 500 yards from the village. Two of the most daring boats advanced towards the shore, where, by this time, many of those from the hill had collected themselves and were engaged very vigorously in pelting stones, nothing daunted. These two boats seized a small junk laying off the beach. In a trice, they had lifted the anchor and, amidst great acclamations, brought away their prize. It is a small tub and will be given up tomorrow. November 4th. Yesterday, stormy. Today, two islanders fixed a small stick in the ground at low water with a piece of paper attached to it. I sent my writer for it. The following is a free translation. This for all to see. You are engaged in contraband trade, a trade severely punished by our respective countries. Your vessels that come here are too much given to disturbances. You have been here already 10 days. You have dared to cut wood on a sacred island with a temple on it, rendering us liable to tempests. Your guilt is very great indeed, as we have none who after the wood, you have taken it to a thievish manner. You are all a set of thieves. You indeed are a desperate set. One of our military officials will come with 1,000 men. Who will do battle with you and slay you. But now we are willing to make it up and not report it. You must believe this document. The other day you snatched away a vessel. You must return it. And then we will not entertain hostile feelings towards you. Be quick. Be quick. So that was his very first trip. It was a military engagement, not a friendly reception. Of course. I mean, the people that were going into Korea knew that it was hostile territory, so they're already going in with weapons. Now, Robert Thomas was not carrying weapons. He goes in as a missionary, but he's attached to a military flotilla. And already you're a threat. The locals see you as a threat. You have your cannons, and those are a threat. You're taking vessels, and that is a threat. They want you to leave, and you're not leaving. That is a threat. So the very first missionary gets off to a very rocky storm. In 1866, Thomas returns back. This time he joins a French naval force. And he does so as an interpreter for the French for Korean. He's already picked up the Korean language. And the French force that he went to North Korea with instead decided to go to Vietnam. So instead he went from this French naval force and changed ships onto an American trading ship that was called the General Sherman. And Thomas persuaded the captain of the General Sherman to sail to Pyongyang to establish trade. If he wanted to do trade as a trader between the United States and Korea, he should go to Pyongyang. And so it was Robert Thomas who convinced the captain of General Sherman to go to Pyongyang and establish trade with Korea, even though a trade was forbidden, international trade. The Koreans had already seen what the Western nations were doing to China. They had forced them into taking opium. They had taken over land. They had moved in with their militaries. Korea saw that, and they wanted no part in that at all. And so they end up going there. And the General Sherman set sail and went into the mouth of the Taedong River, which is the main river that goes right there into Pyongyang. And they went in August of 1866. And Thomas had gospel tracts with him, and he began to throw them onto the riverbank in the Korean language. And the Korean officials repeatedly ordered the American boat to turn around and leave immediately. And around the end of August, the last week of August, on or around the 25th, a crew kidnapped this guy by the name of Hyun-ik Yi. And he was a Korean government official who was in charge of communications with the ship. And then this ex-military officer, Chun Gwan Park, he eventually managed to rescue Yi and reinstated him to his former position as a Korean government official. However, Yi's two subordinates, who had also been taken hostage, they perished and died during these scuffles. And on the last day of August, a crew of General Sherman fired cannons at people that were on the banks of the Korean River. And that resulted in 7 deaths and 5 wounded Koreans. So the very fear of the Korean people were being realized by the General Sherman. They fired their cannons, and the very thing that they were hoping wouldn't take place took place. And with the 7 Koreans that died and the 5 that were wounded, the Koreans declared war on the General Sherman, and they saw it as an enemy vessel. And so the General Sherman actually ran aground on a mud bank near Pyongyang, and they weren't able to leave. They weren't able to turn around. The boat was stuck. And the crew was able to hold off these attackers for 2 days. And the Koreans, they just kept launching attack after attack. But they weren't able to penetrate through the small forces. But those small forces were bound to die because they didn't have food. They didn't have water. I mean, they had the river, but anybody that came out of the boat would be attacked. And so their only hope was for rains to come and for the river to rise so that the boat could be lifted off of the mud bank where they had gone, ran ashore. And so they could turn around and head back out, run for their lives, but they weren't able to. And so while they were sitting there after 2 days, the Koreans began to launch burning boats. So they took boats and they set them on fire, and then they rammed them into the wooden boat of the German General Sherman. And 4 were burnt. 4 people that were on the boat were burnt to death. I mean, they were too scared to leave the boat. The boat was made of wood, so it went up in flames pretty quickly. 2 men had jumped to shore, and as soon as they were off the boat, they were beaten to death by the Koreans. And Thomas came off the boat, and his fate is not really known. What we do know, we found in a small book called Chosen for the Chosen. Now, if you're not familiar with the chosen people, that's what you call the people of Korea, chosen. So they were the chosen people. And so there's a book called Chosen of the Chosen. And it's the only book that I can find that is a biography of Robert Thomas. And that book cost $30-something. Now, I looked it up last Saturday. And I was talking together with Stone and Bethany. Stone is our film guy. And then Bethany is the director of the publishing house. About meeting together with the author of this biography to do an interview with her for Chasing Revival. Now get this. This is where the story gets interesting. If you have lasted this long in our podcast, hang on to your seats, because this is where the story gets interesting. I look up this book and I see that it's written by a woman by the name of Stella Price. And so we try to find, is there any information about Stella Price? Where does she live? Does she have a contact number? Does she have a ministry? Anything. We don't find anything on her. We do find that she had been at UST, Yambian University of Science and Technology. I've been there. I knew a lot of people that have worked there. I know a lot of professors. This is a university right on the border of China and North Korea. A lot of people that have interest in North Korea usually go and work or are educated at UST. So she's been at UST. She's been a teacher at UST. She's also been a professor teaching writing in Massachusetts. And so just outside of Boston. So we decide to try to contact her. We can't find any contact information at all. The only thing that we can find on the connection with Robert Thomas is the church that sent him from Wales. So on that Sunday, we just so happened to have an available Sunday to go to that church and do filming. Now, if you're familiar with church, some of the more rural churches in Wales, these old churches, many of them have closed down or have been taken over and they've become coffee houses, or in some cases, some tragic situations, they become mosques. So we go there and we start filming the church. The next thing we know, the pastor shows up, and the pastor is Korean. So the church in Wales that sent out the very first missionary to Korea now has a Korean pastor, a missionary from South Korea that came to serve at the church that sent the first missionary that brought his people the gospel. His name was Pastor Daniel, and he gave us an amazing tour of the church and then laid out the history of Robert Thomas. And then he said, would you guys like to meet the person who's written the only biography in English for Robert Thomas? I was like, oh, I thought the only one that was written by a foreigner was Stella Price. And he goes, oh, you know her? And I was like, no, I don't know anything about her. He goes, she lives here on the parish, in the house attached to the church, or kind of attached to the church. Would you like to meet her? We show up at their door, knock on their door early Sunday morning. Stella's husband answers in his boxer shorts and t-shirt, just straight out of bed. And we've got a camera there. We're standing there with this pastor from South Korea talking about Robert Thomas. Lo and behold, this is the house that Robert Thomas was brought up in. We were able to hear stories from Stella and her husband, who have been in North Korea doing research, meeting with people that actually knew individuals that were there the day that Robert Thomas died on the beach. We shared stories about Robert Thomas while Steve, the husband of Stella, sat in front of the fireplace where Robert Thomas would have eaten his food, cooked over the open fire in his home in the 1800s before he left for China as a missionary, and then eventually giving his life on the field in North Korea. An amazing story. We plan to actually do a book together with Stella that will be out later this year or early next year. I hope that we're able to do a story about the very first missionary to give his life in North Korea, Robert Germaine Thomas. I pray that this story was a blessing for you as it was for us at Back to Jerusalem. And again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere outside of the border of Wales, a place that sent the very first missionary to North Korea. God bless.